Open your Bibles with me to Genesis 28. Exodus 28. I was going to review a lot. Now, Exodus 28, I thought about moving on past this section, but as I thought on it, as I prayed on it, I just couldn't skip this topic tonight. I've been reading some books and following loosely following some other folks' outlines on Bible survey, and you know, not one of them mentioned in any detail at all the subject we're going to talk about tonight, and that the priest of the tabernacle. And yet I found it something I couldn't skip over. In this Bible survey, we have looked at the most recently the beginning of the nation of Israel. They've come out of Egypt, a great nation now. They're not just a family of 70, but now a couple of million people there as they left Egypt. And We noticed that the giving of the law was, 3 months after they left. And right after in Exodus 20 that God gave the law, Exodus 25, he told them to build a tabernacle. And he was very specific about how to do that and what was to be done in the tabernacle. And that we looked at last week a little bit, that took about 6 months. And so we have from Exodus chapter 20 on through the book of Exodus, the rest of the chapters there are 40, only deals with a space of time about 9 months. And then you have Numbers, Leviticus, really are rolled into that 9 month period of time where God is giving instructions concerning the ceremonial law, where God has given instructions concerning how to serve him, how to obey him, how to worship him. And so we have a great deal of content in our Bibles, the latter part of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, covering a few months of time, really, for the most part. And, well, in Numbers we'll get in more to the wanderings and cover that latter part of 40 years. It's a little bit of both. So we look now at the priest. Last week we looked at the building of the tabernacle, the furniture, some of the overview of some of the furniture and how what it represents and how it represents Christ. And always, our Bibles, when we're looking at gold, we're looking at that thing that is most pure, that we can lay hold of, that element upon this earth that, you know, if you took a match and burnt this pulpit, it'd be nothing left of it. It's wood. There'd be some ashes, but virtually nothing left of it. But you can take gold and you can boil it, you can put fire to it, and all it does is become more pure. You don't change the substance of its purity. And that gold represents the deity of Christ. It represents deity. And as we've looked at, for example, the Ark of the Covenant, that wood overlaid inside and out with gold, the mingling of humanity and deity. Now, we'll look today at three things concerning the priest's robe, that the key components, not soul, but the primary components. There's a lot of gold in the garments that the priest is going to be wearing. That gold represents his deity, the impeccability, that is to say, the sinlessness of Christ and the immutability of Christ. And then we have a lot of blue, purple, and scarlet. Remember, that's the mingling of the humanity and deity, and the mingling of the colors. A lot of embroidery work of blue, purple, and scarlet. And then a lot of fine, twined, white linen, representing the righteousness of Christ. While we're looking at the tabernacle, and now tonight the priest and the high priest and the role that they play, we remember the furniture of the tabernacle. We remember the structure, some of the symbols. But apart from the working of the priest, it's just an empty building. And that reminds us, apart from the working of the Lord, nothing can be accomplished of any eternal value. It has to be the work of the Lord. But then as we look at the priest and his work in the structure, and the high priest that can go into the Holy of Holies, behind the veil, we are reminded of a principle that, to a great extent, a lot of churches are getting away from. I know this church has been taught it, and I wholeheartedly agree with it. Take note tonight, as we're looking through the role of the priest and the garments of the priest, and see if you don't see a principle emerge that teaches us something that we practice here at Faith Missionary Baptist Church, and that's only members participating in the services. Only members playing the piano, singing songs, things of that nature, actively participating in the services. And you'll see that, I think, in the principle as it relates to the priest and his work. And even the regular priest couldn't go back into the Holy of Holies. That was reserved for the high priest. Just a reminder, Exodus 28, the first four verses, will show us God's call upon Aaron. Exodus 28, the first four verses. "And take unto you thee, Aaron thy brother, take unto thee Aaron thy brother and his sons with him from among the children of Israel, that he may minister unto me in the priest's office, even Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar, Aaron's sons. And thou shalt make holy garments for Aaron thy brother, for glory and for beauty. And thou shalt speak unto all that are wise-hearted, whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom, that they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, that he may minister unto me in the priest's office. And these are the garments which they shall make." We'll look at these in a little bit. Breastplate, an ephod, a robe, a broidered coat, a mitre, a girdle. "And they shall make holy garments for Aaron thy brother and his sons, that they may minister unto me in the priest's office." We'll leave off reading right there. And we remind you that Aaron and his direct descendants were called to be the high priests, those that were going to be serving in very specific ways. Now, we hear a lot about the Levites, and remember, we can go to Numbers chapter 3, verses 5 through 9, and if you want to write that down in your notes, Numbers chapter 3, verses 5 through 9, the Levites, of course, Aaron's family is of the tribe of Levi, but the Levites as a tribe, they were given to Aaron and to the priests for specific service in the tabernacle. They were to take care of the furniture, they were to take care of the instruments, they were to do a lot of the maintaining of a lot that went on. And so the Levites were called basically to be the priest's helpers. The high priest was Aaron and then his direct descendants. And so we point out one last thing before we get into the priest's garments, that Aaron was called to be the priest by God, and then his direct descendants. That doesn't mean Aaron's any better than anybody else. That means he had a special calling in his life, and he was set apart for a specific service. And what was thrust upon him was greater responsibility. That doesn't mean Aaron. was fundamentally any better, any more righteous than anybody else. He was cut out of the same cloth as every other human being. But God tapped him on the shoulder and said, "You serve me in this way." Like he calls some preachers, taps them on the shoulder and says, "You serve me this way." Doesn't make the preacher fundamentally any more holy or any more righteous than anybody else. It's just a different calling. Just as in a home, a husband and a wife, a husband is called to be the head of the home, head of the wife. That doesn't make him better. That just makes him called for a specific service. And that keeps order before God. And so that's what we see here in the calling of Aaron. Now, let me mix this up a little bit tonight and say, where did Josh? Come here. And Timmy went to sleep. I was going to get Timmy, but Sam, come up here. I was going to get Timmy tonight and mix it up a little bit. If you can wake Timmy up, he can help. Pass those. Oh, wait, I better keep one for myself. I found a relatively common look at the priestly garb. And I'm sorry it's black and white, but I couldn't copy it in color anyway, so I just kept it all black and white. And these will cover some of the key parts of the priest's garments. And I just start at the top and work my way down. I found this artist's rendering of the priestly garments, and it's pretty common. The one thing that's different on this is the very top piece, the mitre. Thanks. Most of them don't depict that split in the middle on the top like this picture does. Most of them depict it more coming up to a point on top without that particular split. But at any rate, Exodus chapter 28 and verse 39 talks about the mitre or the turban, that working from the top of the priest on our way down. Exodus 28 and verse 39. And it's actually talked about two different things in this verse. And first it talks about, "Thou shalt embroider the coat of fine linen." We'll get to the coat later. "And thou shalt make the mitre of fine linen, and thou shalt make the girdle of needlework." So we really have just a brief little description there of the mitre in the middle of verse 39. And that mitre, made out of fine linen, is a covering of the priest. And now, all through our scriptures, we find that something that covers the head is in many ways a reminder of one's place, of one's role. It would remind the priest to be humble before the Lord, this mitre of fine twined linen. Now, right at the band, what we would say would be the band of the hat, there's a golden plate. And I drew a line to it there right above his forehead. Doesn't show up real well on the black and white picture, but it's a golden plate. Now, that can be described in verse 36 through verse 38. "And thou shalt make a plate of pure gold, and grave upon it, like the engraving of a signet, holiness to the Lord. And thou shalt put on it a blue lace, that it may be upon the mitre, upon the forefront of the mitre it shall be. And it shall be upon Aaron's forehead, that Aaron may bear the iniquity of the holy things which the children of Israel shall hallow in all their holy gifts, and it shall be always upon his forehead, that they may be accepted before the Lord." So on his mitre, is a golden plate, and that golden plate is described in this passage as being on his forehead, and it says holiness to the Lord. That definitely reminds the priest of his role in all of this. He is servant of the Lord, and the Lord is the source and giver of all holiness. We talk about the imputed holiness of Christ. He's an imputed righteousness where he's the source of it. He's the giver of it. And he covers his people with it. Well, on this golden plate, we read that phrase, holiness to the Lord. Below that on his shoulders, this was a little bit harder to depict and you can see on his shoulders where it's raised up a little bit, there are actually two onyx stones, one on each shoulder. The description of these onyx stones, verses 9 through 12 of our text. And thou shalt take two onyx stones, engrave on them the names of the children of Israel, six of their names on the one stone, and the other six names of the rest on the other stone, according to their birth. And the work, with the work of an engraver in stone, like the engravings of a signet, shalt thou engrave the two stones with the names of the children of Israel. Thou shalt make them to be set in ouches, or little pockets of gold. And thou shalt put the two stones upon the shoulders of the ephod, for stones of memorial unto the children of Israel, and Aaron shall bear their names before the Lord upon his two shoulders for a memorial. So upon each shoulder, now the ephod, and you can see where I drew it. We won't get to it just yet, but the ephod is that apron-looking portion, and it's actually front and back, and upon the top of that ephod, it says, the two onyx stones and six names on each stone, 12 tribes, and he said make them in order of birth, so I'm assuming oldest to youngest, six names, symbolizing the fact that God's people are held up by his strength. God's people are supported by his strength, not their own, but they are on the top of his shoulders representing our dependence upon God. And then under the onyx stone, and it doesn't show up at all in the drawing, there were gold chains that connected from those little pads where the stones would set on his shoulders, and gold chains down to that square breastplate on his chest. And there's actually The gold part of the breastplate, as I understand it, is also on the back of the priest. And so it's kind of a balanced front and back breastplate suspended on this on the front with chains and then on the back with chains. And this breastplate is described in verses 15 through 21. And thou shalt make the breastplate of judgment. Now, the breastplate of judgment, when we get to verses 29 and 30, that'll make a little more sense. The breastplate of judgment, hold that in your mind and let's read on. With cunning work, after the work of the ephod, thou shalt make it of gold, blue, and of purple, and of scarlet, and of fine twined linen, thou shalt make it. Four square it shall be, being doubled. A span shall be the length thereof, and a span the breadth thereof. So it's completely square, double front and back. And thou shalt set in it settings of stone, even four rows of stones. The first row shall be sardis, a topaz, and a carbuncle. This shall be the first row. And the second row shall be an emerald, a sapphire, and a diamond. And the third row, ligure, agate, and amethyst. In the fourth row, beryl, onyx, and jasper. They shall be set in gold in their enclosures. And the stones shall be with the names of the children of Israel, 12 according to their names, like the engravings of a signet, everyone with his own name, everyone with his name shall they be according to the 12 tribes. And thou shalt make upon the breastplate chains at the ends, wreathe and work of pure gold. And that goes on to describe about how the breastplate hangs there by the chains of pure gold. So you have the breastplate, and in the breastplate, 12 precious stones. Each of the children of Israel, each of the tribes of the children of Israel, listed on the stones. One name on each stone. Now, interesting thing about that, right there near the heart, the names of the children of Israel right there on the priest's heart. And also, another thing I believe it signifies that every one of the stones are precious, but different. All in the sight of God, they're precious, but different. Goes along with what we talked about at the beginning with the different roles. Doesn't make one more valuable than the other, just different. But precious in the sight of God. Now, I mentioned that about the breastplate of judgment in verse 15. Jump up to verse 29 and 30. And Aaron shall bear the names of the children of Israel in the breastplate of judgment upon his heart when he goeth in unto the holy place for a memorial before the Lord continually. And thou shalt put in the breastplate of judgment the Urim and Thummim. And they shall be upon Aaron's heart when he goeth in before the Lord. And Aaron shall bear the judgment of the children of Israel upon his heart before the Lord continually. Now, part of the name, the breastplate of judgment, would seem to indicate the word judgment there is decision, ability to make a decision. Urim and Thummim is a very curious couple of little stones. And it would be deposited in the breastplate behind towards the back of it, not on the surface where it can be seen. The 12 stones representing the 12 tribes are on the surface, but behind it, the Urim and Thummim. Now, there's a lot that's not known about the Urim and Thummim, but there's a little we do understand, that the priest would consult by God in a way similar to the New Testament idea of casting lots. And the priest wanted to know the mind of God in a matter that he was deciding. The priest wanted to know, okay, this is the fact that I understand about this, and this is the fact that I understand about that, but now God, you show me which is right. And best that I understand it, that Urim and Thummim would be used in that process for God to reveal to the priest his answer. Kind of like casting lots, and the Bible talks about the lot is cast into the lap, but the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. I don't mean to minimize it at all. I don't even hardly like it, but you think of dice, so you think of stones, and you cast it out there, and God turns up which ones he wants. And the Urim and Thummim seem to be, as best that I can understand it, used somewhat in that way. And it would signify to the priest, this is my answer. And I believe that's part of the reason it's called the breastplate of judgment, the breastplate of decision making. So not a lot's known, and the more you read about the Urim and Thummim, the more different ideas you get about it. But that's an overview of the Urim and Thummim. So we have the breastplate. Well, then we have the curious girdle. The girdle that wraps around the ephod. We'll get to the ephod in a minute. The curious girdle is 28:8. That's the text. And a curious girdle of the ephod, which is upon it, shall be of the same according to the work thereof, even gold, even of gold and of blue and of purple and scarlet and fine twined linen. All those things that, again, represent God. That deity represented by the gold, the righteousness represented by the fine twined linen, the blue, scarlet, blue, purple, and scarlet, representing the mingling of deity and humanity. And now this sash, if you will, goes around the waist and it holds it all together. It keeps everything in its place. You can imagine this. The ephod appears to just set on the shoulders and cover the front and cover the back. And what would you have if every time you lean over, that would fall forward? This girdle holds it all in place, and most say it speaks of preparation of service. It's how he's prepared to serve. Now, under that is the ephod, verses 6 and 7. And they shall make an ephod of gold and blue and purple and scarlet, fine twined linen, cunning work. And it shall have the two shoulder pieces thereof joined at the two edges thereof, and so it shall be joined together. So we have this, what we would liken it to as an apron, this ephod. And then the robe of the ephod is under that. Now, the robe, described in verses 31 and 32, will tell us that it's all of blue. 31 and 32, and thou shalt make the robe of the ephod all of blue. And there shall be a hole in the top of it, in the midst thereof, and it shall have a binding of woven work round about the whole of it, as it were the whole of a harbergan, that it be not rent. Now, the blue, most always agree, that represents that it has a heavenly origin. And at the bottom of that, bell and a pomegranate. A bell and a pomegranate. And I don't even know why, but I forgot to draw the line. Exodus 28, 33 through 35. And beneath, upon the hem of it, shalt thou make a pomegranate of blue and of purple and of scarlet round about the hem thereof, and bells of gold between them round about, and a gold bell and a pomegranate, and a golden bell and a pomegranate, and upon the hem of the robe round about. And it shall be upon Aaron to minister, and his sound shall be heard when he goeth in unto the holy place before the Lord, and when he cometh out, that he die not. So we have the description of the bell and the pomegranate around the bottom of the robe of the ephod. And then the coat, the very bottom, well, the part that we can see on the very bottom is called the coat, verse 39. And thou shalt embroider a coat of fine linen, and thou shalt make the mitre of fine linen, and thou shalt make the girdle of needlework. And so we have in verse 39 the description of the fine linen, fine twine linen, white coat. It's not the undermost piece. There are then undergarments. Other passages talk about the breeches that he wears. And so we just are now looking at the outermost portions of the robe and the garments of the priest and some of what they symbolize. All of the pictures that we can come up with, and I am sure thousands more than what we can grasp, this is picturing the work of Christ and the deity of Christ and the righteousness of Christ, and it's picturing how that it is Christ that makes that sacrifice, and how that it is the work of Christ that is that which brings redemption to his people, atonement to God's people, forgiveness to God's people. Now, the Old Testament priest had one serious flaw. Every one of them had this one serious flaw. They died. And then their children would take the role of the priest. And in the case of Nadab and Abihu, they might have died pretty young if they were disobedient to God. But they are only a picture of Christ. And now let's look at just a couple of verses in Hebrews as we wrap this up. The Bible tells us that all that is written is for our learning. The Bible tells us very specifically that the Old Testament is written for our learning, that we might be able to have the picture described for us in the Old Testament and then fulfilled many times in the New Testament and explained. In the Old Testament, many, many truths were proclaimed. In the New Testament, many of those truths were explained. And so we have a little bit of that right now. The Old Testament priest and the work that he did was merely a picture and a symbol. Look at Hebrews chapter 7, verse 23 through 27. And they truly were many priests, because they're not suffered to continue by reason of death. But this man, talking about Jesus, but this man, because he continueth ever, hath an unchangeable priesthood. Wherefore he is able also to save them to the uttermost that come to God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for them. For such an high priest became us, who is holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners, and made higher than the heavens, who needeth not daily as those high priests to offer up sacrifice first for his own sins and then for the people's. For this he did once when he offered up himself. We have in Christ the complete fulfillment of the picture of the Old Testament priest and high priest. In the New Testament, Christ is our great high priest. And in Hebrews chapter 10 is the most vivid. It starts off, for the law having a shadow of things to come. Now, the law, what the apostle has in mind when he writes this, the law, in this case, I don't believe he's talking about the moral law, Ten Commandments. Not primarily. He's been talking about the priest. And thus, I believe the law he's talking about is the ceremonial law. The law of sacrifices that God prescribed. For the law having a shadow of things to come. All of those sacrifices, in all of the work of the priest, in everything that he did, in everything that he wore, it was just a shadow of good things to come. And not the very image of the things, can never, with those sacrifices which they offered year by year, continually make the comers thereunto perfect. The Old Testament priest couldn't make anyone perfect. He himself wasn't perfect. He's just a shadow of the one to come. For then would they not have ceased to be offered. If they could bring perfection, if they could make the offering once and for all, the offerings would have ceased. But they couldn't. Because that the worshipers, once purged, should have had no more conscience of sins. But in those sacrifices, there is a remembrance again made of sins every year. One of the things that is so important to understand about the tabernacle and then its predecessor, that which came after the tabernacle, the temple, and the work that was done within those two facilities and our then coming together in the church, one of those key points that's vital to understand is these things are done so that we remember our condition before God. The continual offering of the priest and the continual work of sacrificing and offering and then the annual atonement into the Holy of Holies. All these things remind us of our great need. And if we lay away from that, we tend to forget who we are, how we're made, and what we are, and our need of Christ and forgiveness. And so he keeps it before our faces. Verse 3, but in those sacrifices there is a remembrance again made of sins every year. For it is not possible that the blood of bulls and goats should take away sins. Wherefore, when he cometh into the world, he saith, sacrifice and offering thou wouldst not, but a body hast thou prepared me. In burnt offerings and in sacrifices for sin thou hast had no pleasure. Then said I, lo, I come in the volume of the book. It is written of me to do thy will, O God. Above when he said, sacrifice and offering and burnt offering and an offering for sin thou wouldst not, neither hadst pleasure therein, which are offered by the law. Then said he, lo, I come to do thy will, O God. He taketh away the first, that he may establish the second. By the which will we are sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. And every priest standeth daily ministering and offering, oftentimes the same sacrifices, which can never take away sins. But this man, Jesus, after he had offered one sacrifice for sins, forever sat down at the right hand of God. From henceforth, expecting till his enemies be made his footstool. For by one offering he hath perfected forever them that are sanctified. All that the Old Testament priest was doing was picturing Christ. I mean, everything that he did, every action that he performed was a picture of Christ. Every sacrifice that he made, a picture of Christ. Everything that he wore, a picture in some way, shape, or form of Christ, of Christ's work. And the fact that he did it over and over reminded, the Old Testament priest did it over and over, reminded the people of their need of Christ. May God get hold of us with our need of him. May God get hold of us with what we have in Christ. May God get hold of us that it make a change in our lives that never, ever is gotten away from. May the Word of God find lodging in our hearts and our brains so that we get so hungry for it that we can't put it down, that we can't stop thinking about it and wanting to know more. What does it say? How do I serve the Lord acceptably? It's my prayer that that's the result of these studies. Let's pray.